Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining today's webinar. I'm Jim Doyle with Business Forward, and I'll be moderating our conversation today. Currently, all lines are in listen-only mode. We're pleased to welcome Ed Keon, the Managing Director at QMA, part of the asset management arm of Prudential Financial. He's here to discuss the 2017 GDP estimate released by the Commerce Department this morning. He will also provide analysis of the different factors driving the economy, including consumer trends and business investments. This will be an interactive briefing, so after our presentation, we'll have time for questions. For those of you who are new to our programming, Business Forward organizes local roundtables, Washington fly-ins, conference calls, webinars, and media trainings for more than 100,000 business leaders across the United States. At these briefings, entrepreneurs, investors, small business owners, and executives get the chance to brief policymakers on issues affecting their businesses and how Washington can work with business to accelerate our economy. To date, more than 600 senior administration officials, members of Congress, governors, and mayors have participated in our programming. This is all thanks to the support of more than 60 of America's largest and most respected companies. Before we get started, I need to cover a few housekeeping items. First, as part of this email confirmation received after registering for this event, it says Open Visual Interface. Click on that link to view today's presentation. The slides are also available on our website at businessfwd.org. Just look for the post advertising this event. As I mentioned, there'll be time for questions and comments. You can participate in three ways. First, you can press 1 at any time during this call to be entered into the queue to ask your question live. You can also email your questions to us at info@businessfwd.org, and I will read aloud for you. Or you can simply type your question in the webinar chat box. Again, you can press 1 on your dial pad to ask your question live. You can email your question to us at info@businessfwd.org, or you can type your question in the webinar chat box. Please include your name, business, and location in your message if you type or email a question. If you ask a question live, please introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. We'll get in as many questions as we can. Finally, this call is on the record, and there may be reporters present. Let's get started. Ed, I'm going to go through the first couple slides, and then when we get to the specific indicators, we'll try to get into a little bit of detail. Slide 2 shows that the U.S. economy grew 2.3% in 2017 and 2.6% in the fourth quarter. This is slightly below estimates of 2.9%. If you go to the next slide, slide 3, the contributions to GDP growth. We saw 6.8% growth in non-residential investment, 1.4% growth in construction, 11.4% growth in equipment, 4.5% growth in IP products, 11.6% growth in residential investment, 3% growth in government spending, and a negative 7% growth in net exports. Ed, which of these categories do you think had the biggest impact on the numbers and is most noteworthy?
Thanks, Jim. This is a report that it's important to really dig into the details. And before I do that, let me just make a quick couple of comments because sometimes this is something that non-economic geeks like me don't realize. And that is when the GDP accounting that you see when the quarterly numbers is based on quarter over quarter on an annualized basis. So basically you take the change from the prior quarter. And although the seasonal adjustments, and in effect, just multiply it by 4. So little changes at the margin from quarter to quarter can be magnified and have an impact both for that quarter and going forward. So a big number leads to a smaller number the next quarter and so forth. So when we look at these numbers, there it was a little light. So the 2.6% is down from the prior two quarters. So you might look at that and say that was a little disappointing. It was below analyst forecasts. However, that was really due to two things. One that you see at the bottom here, which is net exports. That was a big drag. That dragged the numbers down by about 1%. And then the other number you don't see on here is the change in inventories. That also detracted from GDP. But that's actually not a bad thing because if you draw down inventories one quarter, you're going to add to them the next. So that's basically growth deferred, not denied. And the net exports numbers is partially an increase in imports due to the hurricanes. Partially, it's an increase in imports due to the just Americans wanted to buy foreign goods. But as we go into the details, you'll see that actually the most important number there is that the that exports also grew quite well for the quarter. And so we'll get into the details later, but that's good news for the future. And also just a quick comment, if you wouldn't mind, I'm back on page two for a second. So if you look at the economic progress, if you look at the annual numbers, you know, you look at those numbers jumping around for the last 10 years on an annual basis, and really it doesn't suggest much of a pattern. You know, we've been growing a little bit better than 2% for the last 8 years or so. And if you look at the quarterly numbers, you might say, well, this quarter was a little disappointing. Maybe growth is starting to roll over. But as I think as we dig into the details, you'll see that that's really not quite the right interpretation. I do think that growth is accelerating and that we will see better growth as we go through 2018.
Great. Thank you. Well, a big part of that growth is slide four, consumer spending. For the year, increased by 2.7%, and for the quarter, 3.8%. What do you think is driving that growth?
Well, it's both an increase in optimism. So you see that consumer optimism is at a new high in the quarter.
And do you think there's any impact from the tax cuts that will be? How quickly will the impact the tax cuts affect consumer demand? And could it have actually had an effect in the fourth quarter of last year, even though the tax cuts don't occur until this year?
You know, there may have been some effect, but I wouldn't think it'd be big enough to affect a really big number like GDP. For this year, I would expect that there will have a positive impact on consumer behavior and that we will see some of the increase in spending will be due to that. So I think it's the tax cuts will be positive both for business spending and consumer spending in 2018 and in the future. I just don't think it had much of an impact on the fourth quarter of 2017. We only got the bill at the very end of the year, and it was still somewhat touch and go until really the last few weeks whether we're going to get a bill at all. So it may have a small impact, but I think it's a much bigger impact for 2018 and 2019. And for most people, frankly, it won't kick in until they start to see a bigger number in their paycheck when the withholdings are reduced. So maybe we'll start to see a little bit of an impact on the first quarter, but more likely it'll be in the second quarter and throughout 2018 and into 2019.
You've talked about the stock market. What about housing prices? How are they affecting consumer spending?
Well, it's in economics, they talk about the wealth effect, which is basically when your wealth goes up, you spend a little bit of it. People debate what the number is. Maybe it's 1% or so, the increase in wealth. Some think it's a little higher. So when housing prices goes up, it just means you have a bit more possible spending boost, and you tend to spend a little bit of that, whether it's through taking money out from home equity or whatever. So it's a positive effect, but it hasn't been nearly as dramatic as the big run-up in stock prices. So I suspect that right now that's a bigger effect.
Moving on to business investment, slide five. Business investment grew by 4.7% in 2017 and by 6.8% in the fourth quarter. You said that this is the biggest driver of growth. How is that?
Well, the most important thing, if there's one thing anybody takes away from this call, the most important thing for the U.S. economy in 2018 and in the future is what happens to productivity growth. Now, we won't get the next productivity reading for another couple of weeks, but to get economic growth of 3%, which is the current target or greater, to get inflation to stay low, to get wages to go up and keep inflation low at the same time, you have to have stronger productivity growth. And that has been running at a weak level for several years now. And frankly, economists don't really understand why productivity growth goes through the cycles it does, where it goes up and down, and no one really knows exactly why. But we do know that one of the big contributors to faster productivity growth is business investment in productive equipment, like plant and equipment, and so forth. So the fact that this number is up this year and in this quarter is a very promising sign. It both leads to GDP, but more importantly, it may be contributing to the future improvement of productivity and productive capacity. So this is a very good number in this report, and it's probably one of the key things to look at going forward for the future growth of the economy.
Moving on to slide six, non-residential investment trends. Growth in the construction, 1.4%, equipment, 11.4%, intellectual property products, 4.5%. What strikes you, what stands out for you in this slide?
Well, the equipment number. So, first of all, you see that beautiful trend upwards from 4.4% in the first quarter to 11.4%. And as a result of the tax law with expensing and lower tax rates and so forth, that number is likely to increase as well in 2018. So this is not only directly feeds into GDP, but as I said before, this is the most important thing is whether we are able to get productivity growth growing. And certainly this is one clear contributor to productivity growth is spending on equipment. Also partially due simply to the fact that demand has been growing and that capacity utilization and the ability to create to meet consumer demand is challenged. So the fact that this is growing is great news both in the short run and the long run.
And you mentioned the tax cut could support more equipment investment. Could you explain that?
Well, it's partially because of the expensing, the ability to write off 100% of the cost against your taxes over the next 5 years. So that will almost undoubtedly pull equipment spending forward. It's something we may have to deal with 5 years from now, but worry about that later. For now, it means that there's a big tax incentive to spend sooner rather than later on new equipment. And also, it's not just tax-induced spending. There's also constraints on capacity. So having a combination of the fundamental need to increase productive capacity as well as a tax incentive to do so likely means that this surge in equipment spending is going to continue and, again, contribute to productivity growth.
Moving on to slide seven, housing activity. Investment increased 1.7% for the year, 11.6% for the quarter. What strikes you about this?
Well, clearly this jumps around a lot, and it's also influenced by weather. So the big drop in Q3 is probably related to the hurricanes. The other thing is that it underlines the comments I made earlier about looking at quarter-over-quarter annualized numbers. The big increase in Q1 is probably why the Q2 number looks low. The big increase in Q4 is partially due to the drop in Q3. I'm not really concerned about residential spending. If nothing else, the hurricanes will mean that you'll need to do a lot of replacement construction. So I'm pretty confident this number will be a positive contributor to GDP in 2018.
Slide eight, exports, 3.4% increase for the year, 6.9% for the quarter, and also, as you mentioned, imports also grew. What's your take on this?
Yeah, so from a GDP accounting point of view, the fact that imports grew faster than exports reduces the headline number. But this, is, in many ways, I think the exports is a more important number that after a couple of weak years in 2015 and 2016, we saw a really nice rebound in 2017, and that the Q4 number suggests that rebound is likely to continue and maybe even accelerate a little bit in 2018, in part due to the fact that the dollar has weakened over the course of the past several months. So the weaker dollar probably helped a little bit in 2017 towards the end of the year, but it'll be a much bigger impact next year. So despite the fact that the balance of imports over exports was a bit of a drag, the fact that exports are rising and are likely to continue to rise in 2018, I think in some ways is the more important economic story for the United States.
And so you think that the dollar will remain as weak as it currently is through 2018?
That's my best guess. And there's the subject of what causes currencies to jump around is probably a topic for another day. A lot of people have probably seen in the news the controversy over Secretary Mnuchin's comments that some interpreted as to kind of talk the dollar down. But both the secretary and the president emphasized that was not the case. nonetheless, the dollar has been on a weakening trend. And partially, that's likely to be the fact that that at the margin, the U.S., although it's tightening its monetary policy, it's kind of doing it at the path that was expected. Whereas there's a possibility, as growth has improved in Europe, that at the margin, the ECB, although they haven't really said so yet, may end up strengthening or increasing interest rates. So when you look at the balance of change in expectations, it looks to me like the higher rates in the United States, which are big drivers of currency, are probably baked in, whereas the surprise might be towards a little bit tighter policy outside the United States. And that's, I think, why the dollar has weakened. It doesn't mean that the economy is doing badly. It's just on the margin that maybe a switch more towards other economies, which are also doing well. So I do think the dollar is unlikely to have a big rally next year and may weaken a bit further. And if so, that's it's pluses and minuses for the economy overall. It means maybe that inflation pressures will rise a little bit. We'll talk more about that in a second. But it also suggests that exports could be a little stronger, and so you may see a benefit to GDP due to that.
Slide 9, inflation. 1.5% for the year, 1.9% for the quarter. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that there are a little bit of faster inflationary pressures. If you look at the year-over-year numbers, again, you see somewhat like the GDP numbers. There's really not much of a trend for the last several years. But on a quarterly basis, you see a pretty clear upward trend. My guess is that that this will continue. It's at 1.9%. That's almost exactly the 2% target that the Federal Reserve has. So they are pretty much have achieved what they wanted to do, which is get inflation up a little bit in order to essentially prevent deflation. So that's been successful. Now the question is, can we keep it around this level and avoid a further acceleration? And that's why they have been tightening monetary policy and raising interest rates. I think the Fed will look at these numbers and say, good, this is exactly what we wanted to see happen. Inflation has risen up towards our target. And so our policy of steadily but slowly raising rates has been working so far, and it is the appropriate policy for 2018. So on balance, I don't think this is anything to get too concerned about yet. If it did get much higher, of course, then we'd have to start to worry about a stronger reaction from the Fed. But the fact that it has gone up, it's also partially driven by import prices, which have been rising sharply as a result of the weaker dollar. So it's not an unexpected move. As we go into 2018, I guess I'm sounding like a broken record on this productivity thing, but it's really is the key, because if you can get strong productivity growth, even if you have higher wages as a result of a tight labor market, higher productivity growth will offset that and keep unit labor costs contained, so you can get both higher incomes for consumers without higher inflation and a stronger reaction from the Fed. If that happy combination were to occur, that would be great news for the economy. And we did see 3% productivity growth in the most recent reading. So there's reason for hope that we'll be able to get this economic nirvana of strong income growth for consumers without inflation and without a strong reaction from the Fed.
And then last, we don't have a slide here, but personal saving. You mentioned that consumption was outpacing income growth. Savings dropped from 3.3% to 2.6%. How much of a concern is this?
You know, it's not a big concern to me, but it's something to think about. As I said, the consumption growth has been growing faster than income growth for several quarters now. Again, that can't be sustained indefinitely. And it's partially being supported by the wealth effect. But at the same time, the measurement of savings, again, this is one of these, you know, inside baseball economic geek things, is based on taking two really huge numbers and subtracting them. So you take all of consumption minus all of income. So it's all of income rather minus all of consumption. And it doesn't take into effect things like, you know, I know there are a lot of business people on the phone. if you start a business, you grow it for 30 years, and then you sell it for a big profit, it says that you just took out as much money as you needed to live during that period of time, you've been effectively saving by the growth of your business and the value of your business, but that doesn't show up on the savings statistics at all. So it's partially, it's like in the 1990s, you saw that the savings rate dipped down even to negative territory, but partially again because of the wealth effect. So it's something to keep an eye on, but it's not cause for great concern right now. And then again, if I think, let me put it this way. I think investors and business people should ask themselves, is this current situation more like 1995 or 1999? In other words, are we at the end of a boom in stock market and economic growth that's about to turn into a bear market and a slowdown? Or do we still have several years of good growth ahead of us? And the key answer to that question, I think, is likely simply to be what happens with productivity growth. Because in the 1990s, also you saw in the first half of the decade, like we've seen in the last several years, productivity growth was very weak. But it boomed starting in 1995 as we learned better how to incorporate computers into our work and into our daily lives, and that resulted in a boom of productivity. So it's if it's 1999, then of course we need to be a little cautious. But it's our belief that it's more likely to be a couple of strong years of growth ahead, fueled in part by our expectations for a good growth and productivity. And if that's correct, then it may also mean that equity prices have some further room to go up.
Thanks, Ed. Now we'll open up to your questions and comments. If you have a question, please press 1 to speak live on the call, type your question in the chat box, or email your question to info@businessfwd.org. Please remember to introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. We've got two very similar questions from very different points of view, so related to the tax cuts and growth. The first from Vanessa and from Detroit is how much will the tax rates pay for themselves with economic growth? And then we have a question from Philip in Boston, which is, should we have done the tax cuts at a time of near full employment? Would it have been better to, are they less effective because there were so many people who already had jobs?
Yeah, those are both excellent questions. So if you asked most economists how much the tax cuts will increase GDP growth, the answers are fairly small. It's like 0.2 or 0.3 would be probably a typical forecast. And that's probably about right. But we've become maybe a bit more hopeful that it might actually be a little bit better than that. Partially because it's hard to understand the kind of secondary and tertiary effects of a change in taxes. So we see that consumer and business confidence has been rising sharply, we see that companies have announced that they'll be putting money back from abroad and will be increasing wages and bonuses. A lot of that may be, frankly, public relations at this point, but it may also be part of a sustainable trend. It's also possible, just I want to make sure I don't forget this in passing, is that part of the reason why inflation may stay low is that if people are paying lower, business are paying lower effective taxes, one of the uses of the funds, besides increasing share buybacks and dividends and paychecks, might be to lower prices a little bit. So I think the real effect on GDP, based purely on a kind of a static analysis, is probably modest, but I think it might turn out to be more than that. And I have another. Now, by the way, this is one of these things where I should clarify. This is just my personal speculation and doesn't represent the views of QMA or Prudential. But I've been thinking that another kind of unintended consequence of the tax bill might be an increase in tax avoidance. Now, you know, that's not a terrible thing. You know, this is not, you know, cheating, but kind of doing what you can to try to keep your tax bill as low as you can, which everybody tries to do. Because the tax bill is so large and in some cases a little bit vague, you've already, I'm sure a lot of you have heard from your accountants of ways that that you can change your behavior a little bit to try to reduce your taxes. Of course, some of the obvious ones like trying to create pass-through businesses. It's also, you know, you've seen reports on CNBC and elsewhere about states and municipalities trying to figure out ways to help their citizens who may be affected by the loss of state and local income tax deductions, trying to structure their taxes in a way that will allow people to deduct them. My guess is that you'll see a fair amount of that activity this year. Again, nothing wrong with that. Trying to pay the least amount of tax under the law is what everybody tries to do. But because of the some of the provisions of the law, which may be a bit vague, you may see an increase in that. So what that means is, if that's right, and that's just speculation on my part, you may see that the effective tax cut will be even greater than expected. And it may eventually be taken back down the road, depending on what the IRS and the courts say. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that actually the tax cuts end up putting more money in people's pockets in 2018 than even in the official projection state. And if that's correct, then you might also see at least a temporary boost in GDP that's stronger than expected. So it's a combination of the psychological effects as well as maybe some of this tax avoidance that suggests to me that maybe the impact will be a bit stronger than the consensus expects. Now, on the issue of is this the timing good? In other words, we're already long into an economic cycle, and was it really a good idea to kind of boost fiscal policy late in the second when we already have very low levels of unemployment? And that's an excellent question. And I think there's a couple of possible answers to that. One is that the fact that a cycle has gone on a long time doesn't necessarily mean that it's about to end. I think basically Australia has been almost in a nonstop growth period for decades. So you can have very long economic cycles. And, you know, one of the longest standing jokes in economics is that cycles don't die of old age. They're murdered in their beds by the Federal Reserve. So usually cycles end because of a policy mistake or a deliberate policy of the Fed of killing the expansion and leading to a pullback. And so far, at least, the Fed doesn't look like it's ready to tighten policy to the point where it forces us towards a recession. And I think there's two other very important policy objectives that may be served by this tax cut. The one is that there's a lot of people that have missed out on this expansion, in part because they're not part of the labor force. And there's a longstanding debate, which I don't think we really know the exact answers to, is why haven't you seen more wage growth despite low unemployment over the course of the past couple of years? Partially, I think that's due to statistical anomalies and other special factors, but partially it's that people dropped out of the labor force and have not come back in. So a bit of a fiscal boost may try to pull people back in the labor force who have dropped out in the past. And the other thing is not so much for the short-term fiscal boost, but the long-term productive capacity of the economy. Again, I'm not sure I've broken record here, but to the extent that that the tax cuts on the business side do increase spending on equipment and do lead to increase in productive capacity, that may mean that you could get a longer economic cycle. And if you get productivity growth up, you don't necessarily get the sort of higher inflation that encourages the Fed to raise rates and to kill off the cycle. So it's a very good question, but on balance, I'm hopeful that if the tax cuts end up being reinvested for productive reasons, and of course there'll be some things that maybe are less productive, but overall, if you do get the spending on items which will increase productivity growth, then you could see this cycle last quite a bit longer, and we'll look back on it and say this was actually a pretty good idea, despite the fact that it came so late in the cycle.
Our next question is from Hugh Campbell. Hugh, you're live.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm a certified public accountant in the New York metropolitan area. You mentioned the tightness or potential tightness of the labor market. Are there any circumstances that exist now that may not bring people back into the workforce? Two that I can think of is the victims of the opioid epidemic that may not be fit to come back into the workforce, and then there's the reluctance of a lot of companies to hire people between the age of 50 and 65 because of the high cost of health insurance, but then once they're 65 and can collect Medicare, maybe they'd be more willing to hire them. But during that 15-year period, these are situations that perhaps didn't exist in 1995.
Those are good points, and I'll even add a third one to the list to you, which is people that have been in prison. That is, we have a very high level of incarceration in the United States, and obviously it's hard for people to get jobs after they've been in prison. And so there are certain effects that that may be pushing down labor force participation that are special factors, which may be stronger today than they were in the past. But I guess partially I'm an optimist by nature, so the fact that you have been in prison or had a drug problem or are of a certain age, that doesn't necessarily mean that that permanently puts you out of the labor force. I hope we will.
Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry about that.
Can you hear me, Jim?
Yeah, you're back on the line. Thanks. So we've got a couple questions that came in during the break. The first one is from Indra Klein, and her first question is, do you expect any change in the Fed's approach to rates, given that Jay Powell is now the chair? And then she's got a couple others, but I'll start with that one.
Yeah, I think the answer is no. You know, he seems like a moderate guy, and the Fed is committed at this point to increasing rates at a moderate pace. So I think it's quite likely that he represents continuity of the current policy, and he seems like, by all reports, a very solid, intelligent man of very good judgment. So I would not expect to see much change in monetary policy under the new chair.
Second question is, with tax cuts benefiting banks and financial institutions, do you foresee increased loans and credit lines for small businesses?
I hope so. I think that it'll certainly create some incentives both on the lending side, but also create some business opportunities because of companies becoming basically more profitable as a result of paying a lower tax rate. So I certainly hope that that's the case, and I expect that it will be.
Okay, we've got a question from Philip Smith and from Odessa, Florida. How does the growth of business this year compare to the growth secondary to printing money, growth from created by quantitative easing?
Well, I know this is going to be controversial for years about the Federal Reserve's policy and was it a positive or a negative, and my belief that we faced a crisis in 2008-2009, and the Federal Reserve and other monetary authorities around the world reacted with unprecedented force to try to stabilize the situation, and the fact is it worked. In other words, we did manage to recover from 2008-2009, and although growth has been a little disappointing the last several years, we have had steady growth in the U.S. and around the world. So I don't think that the growth we've had the last couple of years is artificial. I think it represents real growth. There's quite a few people who believe that the rise in stock prices and other asset values was influenced by the Fed's easy policy, and I think that's likely correct. But I think what we're seeing is the test is if you can Now, take away some of that accommodation. The Fed is very slowly shrinking its balance sheet and raising rates. And so far, as we see in this report today, it hasn't had a negative effect on the real economy. So I tend to think that the rise we saw in the recovery was not artificial, but represented a real gain. I think the Fed's policy contributed to that. And the fact that we've been able to continue to grow and maybe even accelerate growth while they're slowly pulling that monetary accommodation away, I think tends to be a suggestion that things were done correctly rather than an indictment of the Fed.
And our last question relates to tariffs. It's from Ricardo Avila. Do you think the Trump administration being protectionist will improve the productivity of the U.S.?
No, I don't. What I do hope is that that the efforts to try to better balance imports and exports will have a positive effect on the economy in the long run. But I suspect that's probably should be more focused on improving and increasing exports rather than try to reduce imports through protectionist measures. What tends to happen in those circumstances is that other companies retaliate, and of course, trade wars, as we learned during the Great Depression, are not very good for economic growth or for productivity. So I think so far that the things that have been done have been relatively modest and measured, and more a suggestion of seriousness rather than the start of a much more trade war scenario. But the real boost will come, I think, not so much from efforts to reduce imports, but to increase and improve exports and increasing tariffs, as a thing in itself, I don't think does much for helping productivity growth.
Thank you. Well, that's all the time we have for today. For those on the call, thank you for joining us. Please check your email for a post-event survey where you can let us know what you thought of today's call. Thank you, Ed Keon, for your help, and look forward to work with you again in the future. And if anyone has questions we were not able to get to, please email them to us at info@businessfwd.org, and we'll try to get back to you. Ed, thank you very much, and everyone have a great day.
Thank you.